Marty Lurie here as we get ready for Giants baseball and the Reds. It is Friday, and we got our philosopher back, and that is Tony Watson, back from the tundra, the Arctic of Colorado and the craziness of Cincinnati. How's it feel to be back?
Oh, it always feels good to be back here, but, after the last couple of days in Denver, it was pretty cold out there, Marty. It was snowing yesterday. It was, the scoreboard said 40. I don't believe it. I'm pretty sure it was in the mid-30s, and we fought and scratched and almost came back and would have been a great, great win for us. But, we battled all the way through and, had the winning run at the plate there in the last out. So, didn't go our way, but definitely good to be back for the weekend.
So what do you do to stay warm? Because even Andy Baggerly, believe it or not, said that they heated up the hot dog grill and he was warming his hands up so he could type and do his story. What do you do?
Well, you got to move around. I mean, obviously, we're out there in the bullpen, and there's a little heater they give us with the little propane tank. So it doesn't do much. It'll warm one guy up at a time, and we rotate that thing around. But you just got to keep moving around, stay loose, because it was a long game too. It was a 4-hour game, so that's usually the way those things go. Is the snow, the wind, the cold, and then it's you're out there for a long time. And just try to stay loose, try to move around. Extra layers, hand warmers, hoodies, stocking hats. I mean, we pull it all out. They had the big. I don't know if anybody saw it on TV, but they had the big lineman jackets, like the linemen wear in the NFL. And some guys were on deck even with those on. And just trying to stay loose. It's difficult circumstances, but it is what it is. You got to get through it.
What's the biggest challenge in playing in weather like that? And then I'll ask you, I mean, you've been around, you grew up in cold weather, you've been in Pittsburgh. First question, what's the biggest challenge? And two, what's the coldest you ever been?
Well, the biggest challenge, I think, is mentally. Just mentally, you got to accept and know that we're playing this game. I mean, we're doing this. It's not ideal baseball weather. It's not beer and hot dog weather in the stands. It's, it's hot chocolate and gloves and... you just got to figure out a way to get yourself ready, because usually the team that wants to be out there more is going to be the team that comes out on top. So that's what I always told myself. I grew up in Iowa, so there were some springs where there were some cold games like that. And I always thought, and maybe it's just because I was a pitcher, but the advantage was to the pitcher. You see a lot of guys that don't want to get jammed. You get jammed in a game like that, your thumbs are going to be ringing all game, and you're going to remember it. I mean, if you get jammed in your first AB, your next four or five ABs, however many there are, you're going to be thinking about not getting jammed. So, as a pitcher, you can use that to your advantage, definitely. And as far as feeling the baseball, it's a lot more difficult to feel the baseball. There's not a lot of the balls are cold. Your hands, there's not a lot of feeling on your hands. It's dry. You're not obviously sweating. You're not getting any lather going to get anything like that. And like I said earlier, just trying to stay loose, stay limber, and to keep your proper mechanics, and hopefully get out of there healthy, but do the job too.
Well, that's our philosopher, Tony Watson, from the Arctic. Is that the coldest you've ever been in a ball game? Anything colder than that?
Unfortunately, no, that's not the coldest. I'm going to go way back machine, but Jordy Mercer is a shortstop with me in Pittsburgh forever. He's in Detroit now, but he went to Oklahoma State University, and I was at the University of Nebraska, and we played a game. It was 27 degrees first pitch, and I was pitching. I sat in the bathroom between innings with the heater. And we always talk about, no matter how cold it got, we played some cold games in Pittsburgh. We played some cold games in Wrigley Field in those day games early in the season. And both of us always looked at each other and laughed whenever it was cold, because we knew that was, no matter what, it was never going to be the coldest game that we had played. And still to this day, that's the coldest. I'll never forget it. And his dad, his parents were at that game, and they always reminded me about it, and we laughed about it. But, like I said, growing up in the Midwest, there's some unusual circumstances, crazy wind, early spring weather that you're not expecting. You're hoping it's going to turn to summer, and it's not quite ready. And but yesterday, yeah, those games were cold. That first inning when it was snowing, I mean, it was starting to accumulate there on the warning track in the background. And, I thought maybe we were in a little jeopardy, but, we got it in. And Maybe we got lucky that it was so cold. If it was 55, it would have been pouring rain, so we might not have got it in. So, you know, unfortunate that we lost, but, you know, definitely an experience we'll remember.
All right, home runs. What a road trip. I'm telling you, honestly, and I can't remember a road trip like that through Cincinnati, Colorado, two parks where you can hit the ball. But, I mean, you got to be sitting there watching this first inning and the ball just flying out of there on everybody.
Yeah, the ball seemed to be flying again, and I think it's not just the parks. I think people are starting to notice a little more, just like a couple years ago. And you know, we're into this launch angle and exit velo age, and you know, not many guys are cutting down on two strikes. They're letting it fly. So you get in a park like that, where Cincinnati, it's you know, I played there in the NL Central for a number of years, and you just got to keep executing your pitches, and you can't let whatever happens behind you happen. I mean, there's going to be balls that go down the line that look like pop flies off the bat, and they're going to unfortunately be homers in the first row. And it's something you just got to keep going. You got to keep grinding, keep making your pitches, because it is a smaller park. The ball does fly, especially right center, left center, down the lines, everywhere. It's the Great American Small Park. I mean, that's what everybody calls it. It's a small park. And then Coors Field, I mean, obviously that's the ball flies there, and everybody knows that. So that's another place you just got to, you know, put it behind you and make your pitches. But, yeah, definitely the balls, you know, Pat Vendetti was up over Cincinnati last weekend, and he had mentioned to me that the balls were changing AAA this year to Major League balls, and the Pacific Coast League is just doubling in homers, just at a record pace. So, yeah, it is what it is. We're all using the same baseball, so you got to go out there and you just got to accept it and try to make your pitches and keep the ball in the park.
Derek Dietrich, a funny guy, I guess, a left-handed hitter, but a character. And here come the bees. And you got bees all over the place. And here he comes with a beekeeper outfit. What about that?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was the beekeeper outfit, too. I later found out that it was the guy that Senzel, they just called him up. It was his dress shirt for the airplane. So he kind of had to wear that one. But, yeah, it was interesting couple minutes there. I mean, the bees just kind of came out of nowhere. Everybody's ready to go. And then all of a sudden there was a huge swarm of bees right above the umpires at home plate. And, I mean, it was a significant swarm, so luckily nobody got hurt. But, yeah, definitely an interesting dynamic to start a ball game, and one that I'll never – I mean, I've seen it a couple times in spring training, I guess, in Arizona that happens. And I think they swarmed the camera and took over the camera. But it was interesting seeing the beekeeper up there and trying to contain it and put the box out. And I think they ended up finally taking control of it. Nobody got hurt, so that's the good news. But an interesting situation to start the game.
Boy, what a trip. Really, you see something different. I'm glad we could do the shows and be able to talk about this stuff. Tony Watson, of course, nice to have him with us. Albert Pujols, 2,000 RBIs, hit a home run, and a young man in his 30s from Detroit, I guess, got the ball in the outfield and doesn't want to part with it. And, you know, they offered him this and that. What's your take on it, being a player and, you know, a sacred moment maybe for Pujols? He doesn't seem to care, but what's your take on that? It's been all over the news.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's got so many milestones. I mean, I don't know that the one ball is, you know, going to matter as much to him as, you know, some other ones that he's got in his collection. I mean, that guy's got a lot of hardware and a lot of stuff going on. It's interesting that the fan wanted to hold on to it. I'm not sure what his you know, goals with it are, or maybe he did, maybe he is just a fan and wants to hold on to it. But like you said, it looked like he was a mid 20 something and just caught the lucky enough to catch the ball. And usually, you know, you can exchange a bat or an autographed bat or something, or some tickets, or you know, try to get that ball back for that player. And you know, there's certain milestones that guys hit, you know, your first pitch, your first strikeout. But for this guy, he's 2,000 RBI, I mean, 600 homers, whatever. It's starting to get up there with the greats of all time. So I don't think Albert Pujols is going to concern himself too much with a single RBI ball, but you know, it's pretty cool. I mean, 2,000 RBI, that's a lot of RBI, and that's a lot of long time playing and hitting in that batter's box. So you know, hopefully he'll get a couple more, and I don't know what the record is, but you know, maybe he might have a shot at that, and hopefully that fan will give him the ball then.
Well, I'll ask you this. Did you ever have to pay to get a ball back for something that you did?
I haven't. Nobody wants a lousy left-handed reliever's milestones. But last year, Duggar hit his first homer in Arizona, and Giants fan down there caught the ball, and we had to negotiate. The bullpen had to negotiate a little bit to get that baseball back. So it does happen, but it's, you know, a guy's first. You know, you want the guy to have his first, you know, hit, first homer, first strikeout, first win. You want those ones. You know, those, that's a lot of special. The road, the dream come true, and everything that you put into it to get to that point in the major leagues, and then you get your first out of the way. It's those are the special ones that you hold on to. So, as far as Albert Pujols, though, I mean, yeah, he's got a lot of them. So, I don't think he's too concerned about it.
Well, someone said he's a law student. So I heard that from Detroit. He's a law student. So that tells you something, right?
Yeah, maybe he's leveraging that thing. He thinks he's going to leverage that thing for some negotiation later down the road. So he's got a plan. I'm sure he's got a plan if that's the case. So we'll see what ends up with it.
All right. Tony Watson with us. A lot of metrics in the news lately. We see it every day. You guys are inundated with it all the time. What's your favorite metric that you go to learn something about yourself or a hitter? Where do you go?
So, yeah, this is an interesting because you can go down the rabbit hole real quick on these. There's so many now, and you can back up your argument with, you can find a number to back up your argument pretty much any route you go. So, for me, myself, throwing later in the game, I look at whip. That's walks and hits per innings pitch, because if you're allowing, I mean, that's not a new metric. That one's been around. Right. And that for me tells me how many base runners I'm allowing. Am I allowing traffic on the bases? Because if you're out there for one inning and it's a close game, you can't afford yourself to be allowing very many base runners. And then strikeouts to walks, I mean, that's always big for me. How many guys are, if you got a guy on third less than two outs and you need a strikeout, you got to be able to figure it out. I mean, there's also, you could dive in deep. I mean, this is exactly what I was saying to my point. You can go down the rabbit hole, but you can look at the strikeout to walk, and is he getting swing and misses or is he getting takes? Swing and miss guy, obviously he's going to play a little bit better in a situation like that, or you need to miss a bat. And obviously anytime you can limit free passes, the walks, they'll always kill you. It doesn't matter what inning, but some guys, we talked about this the other day, FIP, ZRA gone, FIP. I mean, you come out here to Oracle, you see this fancy new scoreboard, you see all the stats now, and you see FIP up there, and some guys say they'll pitch to FIP over ERA now, and it's educational now, I think, for our fans especially, and even some of the guys in the dugout. I mean, you can look up there now and you can see exactly what it is. It's right in front of you. The numbers are real. For me personally, I've always looked at whip, and I've always looked at strikeouts to walks.
All right. Well, for you, it's a good one. What about exit velocity for you?
Yeah, definitely. As a sinker ball guy, I don't have a lot. K per nine is obviously relievers. They look, you look through bullpens and strikeouts per nine. Anybody in the double digits, anybody in the high teens, usually is a back end guy. And if the more of those guys you can accumulate, the better your staff's going to be. And if you're not accumulating any K per nine, if you're not in the double digits, sinker ballers look at exit velo against. Are they weak contact to the barrels? Barrels 98 or plus, 98 above or above, 98 miles per hour or above. So, try to limit barrels. I mean, look, exit velo now at the shifts, you keep a guy on the ground and he's still hitting it 105 miles an hour on the ground, he's got a way better chance, higher probability to beat the shift. So, but the barrels, I mean, anything over 98, and, the numbers say that if you limit damage, slugging percentage, extra base hits, the higher the exit velo, the higher the chance that those are going to be doubles, triples, homers, and that's when you get yourself in trouble out there.
Yeah, boy, you could spend a whole day just looking at the stats.
Exactly.
Really? Well, you're handling Bellinger, okay? I'll tell you that. You're getting them.
Knock
so,
on wood.
Well, yeah, whatever's going on, you're doing something right against the left-hander. Tony Watson with us, the traditional closer. There are all sorts of teams that have all sorts of players getting saves now, and again. again, you've been a closer, and this change, maybe 3, 4 years, 5 years, maybe less, but it seems like teams now are not wed to the Kenley Jansons of the world, or maybe Yates is having a great year, but it seems like a lot of people get a shot now.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what my previous point was about how many good arms there are now. I mean, you got guys coming in the fifth inning, sixth inning now that are the first guy out of the bullpen, and they're throwing 95-plus with a devastating off-speed pitch, second pitch, for that they can throw for strikes and expand and get swings and misses. And, you know, it's come to the point where I think there's a certain situation per game where the game's going to tilt one way or the other, and some managers and front offices have decided they're just going to throw their best guy that inning. Yeah. And it makes sense, but I also think those last three outs, I've lived them, and I've excelled there, and I've failed there, and those are tough outs to get. And
Why?
I mean, they're tough because it's the last three outs. Everybody's grinded the whole game to get to that spot, and everybody's. I mean, the ninth inning. You know, sixth, seventh, eighth inning. People are still drinking beer. They're into it. The ninth inning, everybody's on their feet. Everybody's watching the game. Everybody's doing it. It's for you personally. It's not any. You're not putting any added pressure on yourself or anything like that. It's still, you know, you still got to throw strike one and do all that. But for whatever reason, there's some guys that, like Kenley. I've played with some good closers. I played with Kenley in L.A. Mark Melanson was an outstanding closer in Pittsburgh with me. You know, those guys are going out there and they're locking down 50 saves a year. It's pretty incredible. And you start to look at the number of guys that had 50 saves, 45, 50 saves in the history of the game. It's pretty slim. So, you know, those guys are getting paid handsomely because of that. And I'm not going to say it, but that's I will say it. But that's probably also why we're seeing a little bit too, is because financial comes into play a little bit here. But Craig Kimbrell's still on the market. Guy's got 300, going to have 300 saves, or does have 300 saves. I'm not sure, but fastest, you know, rate ever. And I mean, look at that guy's stuff. You're telling me that guy can't help a team right now? I mean, that's ridiculous. So, it's interesting, but I do think it's just, you know, that we're in the age of higher pitch velocities. Everybody's got two, sometimes three pitches that they can throw for strikes at any count, and you know, there's certain situations that are earlier than the ninth inning where they want to put their best guy on their best pocket of the lineup, and look, it makes sense sometimes, and when it doesn't work, it doesn't make sense. So it's you know, the manager's got to answer to that that night. But you know, you play the probability of 162 games at working over the course of those, and you're probably gonna have decent success. So I get it, but I also am a traditionalist, so I like the old way too.
Yeah, well, it's a different way to do it. You're right. That closer can come in earlier in the game, and someone else can get the last three out. So that's part of the evolution of baseball that we're going through. Tony Watson with us. Bryce Harper. Let's end with him, and then I'm gonna let you ask me a question. So don't forget about that. But Bryce Harper got booed in Philadelphia. So the question comes up, it just made me think about it. Fans booing. I mean, you're on the field. Have you been booed? Do you hear it? And what's the protocol? What's the level before a fan should boo? Should it be prolonged failure of one moment, not hustling? I don't know. As a player, what do you think?
As a player, I mean, the fans pay good money to come into the games, and I respect that. And as a player, I want to go out there and try as hard as I can every night and give it whatever I've got to do the best that I can for them, that they came out spending 3 hours, 4 hours a night away from their home to come out and watch us perform, and they deserve it. I mean, we need to take pride in playing hard and giving it whatever we got for that night to go out and try to win a game so that they can enjoy the experience of coming to the ballpark. I mean, that's all there is to it. I mean, you talk to any – when I was coming up, I mean, that's what everybody talked about, the veteran guys. These people pay good money to come out to these games and watch you play hard and try to win a game for them, and they're diehard fans. I mean, some of these people have been fans for generations, and you know, they live and breathe Giants baseball or whatever, you know, here in San Francisco, but whatever city they're in. And you know, booing, I've been booed plenty of times. I mean, that's just the life of a late inning reliever. You give it up, you're going to get booed. It is what it is. I
mean, you hear it?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, the worst I did, I blew a save in Baltimore and got booed off the field. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the hell am I getting booed? I just blew the save there. And then it's because there's so many Pittsburgh. But there's just so many fans and so avid that, you know, they expect success and they want you to do it. So, you know, they expect you to go out and do your job and do it well. And they earn that. They pay the ticket and they come and watch us. And that's kind of where I stand on all that.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you don't get booed, but but it's okay. All right. I'll let you ask me a question if you want, and then we'll wrap it up with that.
Yeah, I'll stick on the Baltimore theme. I remember seeing something about Brooks Robinson was your favorite player, and I'd like to dive into that a little bit. Obviously a great player, one of the best of all time, and top third baseman, but I kind of want to ask you, I saw this question, it's kind of going down the Brooks Robinson Baltimore thing, but Mad Dog Russo had top five right-handed hitters of all time. Who's your top five?
All right. Well, that's a good question. Well, I go Willie Mays. You know, I like putting Willie in there. I think Pujols is in there. I think Hank Greenberg is in there as well. I like Frank Robinson. I think he should be in there as well. And those are my top guys. And I'm probably
DiMaggio.
And DiMaggio, of course, is in there as well. So those would be the top five, I think.
So for me, I was a little appalled because he didn't have Willie Mays in there.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that. And he also didn't have Rogers Hornsby in there, who, if you go back and look at Rogers Hornsby's stats, it's pretty amazing. Leading on-base slug, OPS, I mean, hitting .400 twice to win Triple Crown. I mean, that's pretty amazing. But, yeah, different eras, different times. But, yeah, I was just curious. I thought it was an interesting question. He had Pujols. Obviously, Pujols was in there. But this is a tough question. And I started thinking, digging. There's a lot of good right-handed hitters in the game. So I was just curious. And it's a pretty good five for you, too.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Hornsby, that's a good call for you. And I heard Mad Dog do this because he was into the Pujols thing today on the radio. So I heard him talking about his top guys. And he had Mays. He didn't even have Mays in his top five.
Wow. And I can't believe that. I mean, Willie Mays... obviously, we're a little biased here, but if you don't have a top five, talking hitting, especially right-handed hitting, and you don't have a top five with Willie Mays, I think something's wrong with that for sure.
All right. Hey, good show. Our philosopher, Tony Watts. Always a pleasure, Tony. Talk to you a couple of weeks.
All right. Sounds good, Marty. Thanks for having me again.
All right. More coming up. KMBR 680, the sports leader.